Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Memorial Day deals are here at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances, including Samsung. Plus, save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more, like the Samsung Bespoke French Door Refrigerator featuring Beverage Center and Dual Ice Maker. Shop at Lowe's today. We help. You save. Valid 5/15 through 6/18. Selection varies by location. Total savings varies based on purchase amount. See Lowe's.com for details.
Let's transition back into the National Hockey League regular season, reflecting on the Four Nations face-off. It's 100% hockey with Millard and Shannon. Will this tournament be remembered for the United States pushing Canada and dropping the gloves and drawing the line in the sand? Will it be for Canada responding, or the growth of the game and the exposure the game received over the last 10 days?
Well, I think there's an even simpler question to ask first, and it will be, will the tournament be remembered? Because these playoff races, and we get back to the club teams, and we get back to what's going to happen at trade deadline on March 7th, and then the race to the finish in the middle of April and the playoffs, you know, people won't have that much time to reflect. You know, it was 7 weeks ago that Canada was in tremendous disarray with our world junior hockey team having failed so miserably in Ottawa. You know, we didn't reflect on it. We didn't worry about it. I understand that this is an emotional time, and it was a great game, and it was a really, really exciting final. But it was a mid-season tournament. It wasn't the Olympics. It wasn't a World Cup. It was a placeholder. And God, it was cool. By next Thursday, will we really remember it at all? I think is a better question.
I appreciate the performance that the four teams put on, particular Team USA and Team Canada, even more because it wasn't the Olympics, because it wasn't a World Cup, because it was basically for pride.
Yeah, this was actually much closer to the rivalry series the women have between Canada and the United
States.
That's
a good point.
You know,
there is
a lot of emotion and a lot of rivalry in those games we see and that's an 8-game series, not just 2 games like we saw Canada and the United States play. Listen, it was exciting. By the way, you're in Vegas. What did you think of ESPN's desire to link this team with Lake Placid with their miracle on ice opening with the Herb Brooks speech?
I'm not going to get a job at ESPN, so I can say this. I didn't like it. I thought it was
I loved it.
You did, eh?
I
thought the production was great. And the speech and the players, modern day players watching it. But one's the miracle on ice, the Olympics, and the other one is a placeholder. I didn't think they deserved to be in the same location.
And I understand that, and that is logical. And for a hockey person, that makes sense. But it was the non-hockey people it was for. It was those when you talked about 2 minutes ago about growing the game. Well, there's a lot of people that, you know, that reflect on where hockey is and what hockey does, and they have placeholders, and that placeholder would be Lake Placid, would be one of them. And that's what they remember, and it's what they've read about or they've heard about. So to be able to put it in that perspective, I thought it was a first of all, well executed. I thought it was fantastic. I wasn't happy that they were trying to sell you to, you know, to download the movie and pay for it. But I thought it was a brilliant idea, well executed, and it was fun. And God, we need some fun these days. And I do have a bias because I knew Herbie very well. I worked with Herbie for 4 years. I know you'd be shocked at this. We had battles, Darren. We had battles, the two of us, because we have different philosophies of the game, one being a Canadian and one being an American. But in the end, we were, for the last decade that Herb was alive, we were great friends. And I really enjoyed it, and it did bring a little bit of a tingled down my spine when I watched it.
1980, the Miracle on Ice. Then you've got the Gretzky trade. 1994, the Rangers win the Stanley Cup. The hockey's on top of the world. 1996, the Americans win the World Cup. Does this tournament fit into some of those opportunities to explode the popularity of the game?
I think it will be. I think it will be one of those ones where there'll be young kids who have watched and say they want to watch. They want to play the game now. They want to be more involved in the game. There might be some people. The onus now is on both the Players Association and the league to have an exit strategy and to have a plan in place. You know, we had tremendous excuses, valid excuses, because I was part of the process at that point. But in 2002, when it was Canada, USA, and Salt Lake City, there was no ability to access the footage of that last great game between Canada and the United States for promotional uses because it was owned by the IOC. Same thing in 2010 with Sydney's golden goal. There was no way to access that footage immediately to say, hey, this is NHL hockey, come and watch. Well, they own this footage. This is all of their footage, this whole tournament, seven games. The question now will be, and I think that Gary has every right to sit in the boardroom and ask his executive group, saying, okay, what are we doing with it now? How are we going to – we've exposed the game to so many people. How are we going to be able to have a strategy that keeps those people – the people that don't normally watch, keep those people engaged in the game? And by the way, that's not just in the United States. I think that's in Canada too. I think there are people in Canada that, you know, got turned on to the game because it was Canada versus the United States and they watched. And I think we'll see when the TV numbers come out that's reflected.
Give me a couple of players who made statements. Connor scores the game and tournament winning goal. The Tkachuks obviously had a major force in this tournament. Craig Binnington Jordan Binnington told everybody to stuff it. Connor Hellebuyck.
I tell you what, the two goaltenders cannot be faulted. The two goaltenders did their job. That's how close they were. Jordan Binnington obviously proved a lot of naysayers wrong. It's funny, you know, Doug Armstrong, when he was on with us, a month ago, Darren, told us we're going to have one goalie and we're going to stick with him. And that's exactly what they – so anytime anybody said, well, are they going to change goalies? No, not according to Doug Armstrong. He's going to stick with it. So that was one thing. Jacob Slavin, to me, went to the next level. Faber, the two defensemen, that they became the number one pair for the United States. 28 minutes. They were stalwarts all night long. I thought they were just fantastic. Jake Sanderson, you know, thrown in, played very, very well. Same way Thomas Harley. I mean, that's a tough spot to be thrown into again.
Drew
Not
Doughty
the first time.
Playing his way in.
All I'm doing is mentioning defensemen because that's the toughest position to play in the game. In a game like that, and those guys really made a difference, and that's why it was such a close game. At the same time, Brad Marchand and Sam Bennett, what guys that I would describe as prototypical Canadian players, you know, guys that have skill but are not afraid to mix it up and use some of their physical attributes to win games. Guys that can be chippy, boy, I thought they played really well in the game as well. And beyond McDavid, beyond MacKinnon, beyond Makar, because those guys, there is an expectation and they matched it. So from that perspective, there were very few guys. There were very few guys that didn't live up to expectation.
Yeah, Mitch Marner makes a play at the end.
Well,
Sydney
and, you know,
was Sydney.
You know, is tournament being this way? I mean, you're being short. You don't have too much practice time, although they had 2 days off. But so making in-game adjustments became that much more important. You know, we glowed about Mike Sullivan with the Eichel move with the two Tkachuks in the first game that changed it for the United States. John Cooper put Braden Point with Connor McDavid. That changed things at some point in against the Finns. And then he wasn't afraid to go back to Marner with McDavid again, where it looked like prior to that, McDavid and Marner just had no chemistry. And when push came to shove, when you needed chemistry, it was Marner in the corner to McDavid in the slot. And that's all the chemistry you needed.
And the game's best player scores the winning goal.
You know, it's 87 in 2010, 97 in 2025. The fascination, I thought the players did an amazing job of downplaying the importance of the tournament after the game.
Yes.
Because I think that we were saying this is the, you know, a lot of people were saying this is the greatest. Yeah. This is going to be, and they would say, well, you know what? It's only a 14 tournament.
Yes.
This isn't the real deal.
It was everything until it was over, and then it wasn't everything.
Right. And so now, you know, this is like going to the fanciest restaurant on the Strip in Vegas. Have you ever been?
Yep.
Well,
three times.
More money. This is like going to the fanciest restaurant on the Strip in Vegas, and you've just finished the appetizer. We've got the appetizer, and now we've got a year to wait for the main course. And the main course is going to be in Italy, and it's going to be fantastic. And we're going to see, I would assume, 75 to 80% of these players return to the Olympics. And it's going to be must-see TV next time around.
A player that did not participate in the Four Nations face-off, but is expected to be involved in the Olympics, was a very keen observer last night. Alex Pietrangelo has just joined the waiting room. We'll
check in
with him.
Petro?
Next. Petro. Petro.
You wait. If you call him Petro, I'm going to just.
We'll find out right after this on 100% Hockey with Millard, Shannon, and Petro.
Oh, there we go.
First player we've ever had on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. That's got to feel good. Like, of all the accomplishments that you've had, Alex, like, this has to rate right up there.
First player.
Yeah.
What do you guys talk about, though? That's pretty cool.
We usually have executives and coaches media people.
Yeah.
So
yeah. We don't have the guys that make all the money, Alex.
Well, just a normal guy. Right, Darren? We talked about that many times.
Absolutely. And I have no idea. I'll preface this right now. I have no idea where this conversation will end up going because I call him like one of the most interesting people in the National Hockey League, Alex Pietrangelo, the way he can dabble in everything. But last night was entertaining and interesting. Were you on the edge of your seat?
I watched. I was in and out. We went to dinner with a few friends, so we were kind of in and out of the game. I was trying to watch overtime. It was kind of in the back corner by the bar area. So we were watching a little bit, but I wasn't too invested in it. We already had plans. So it is what it is. It would have been nice to sit down with the kids and watch it, but.
Were you invested all in the tournament as a viewer?
I don't think I watched any of the games from start to finish. My kids wanted to watch Jack and Stoney. They understand, obviously, watching us play. All I remember is that the American Canada game, we went to California for a couple of days and they were wondering why Jack and Stoney didn't fight each other. I was like, well, probably not the best idea. And then they saw Hanny and they're like, oh, I know him. Cause they don't, Hanny's only been here for a year, right? So they don't see him. I haven't seen him quite as much. So, but I was trying to explain this. Probably not the best interest for our team to have our two star forwards fight each other.
But it's not as if you need to sell tickets there. I mean, come on.
I prefer them to be on the ice. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
You've been through the midseason best on best. What will be the challenge for Mark and Jack and Noah coming back?
Well, when I did it, I went from Sochi to Vancouver all in one day. So that was far less than ideal, that's for sure. So there'll be I think emotionally, it's just a lot, right? It's a long couple of weeks. So that part, it is still a lot of travel, right? Those guys have been on the road for 3 weeks coming from, we were on the East Coast and then they're there. My travel was terrible. I mean, that was just a tough situation. I remember me and Bomeister just exhausted for about 2 weeks sleeping, not even being on the opposite really time of where we were. So it's just an emotional thing, but our schedule, we're not too bad. We're Saturday, Monday, we have a couple of days. So I'll give the guys a little bit of a chance to kind of reset, but they'll be on Eastern time. So 3 weeks on the East Coast will change your clock on your body. So, but we've done it before. They'll be fine.
Now, people who watched this tournament talked about the speed of the tournament. I would assume that the Olympics in 2014 were as fast as what we watched in this tournament. Is there an adjustment to go from the speed of a tournament like this to NHL caliber games?
No, not really. I think you're, especially this tournament, it being all NHL players, it's pretty much the same guy as you've seen or played with if they're your teammates. So I don't really see that being a lot of an adjustment. Like I said, the hardest thing going to the Olympics, obviously, is being in Europe and then coming back. And I did the same thing happen when we went to Sweden for the start of the season for the regular season games against Detroit. That was hard coming back. The time change is not easy to adjust midseason. So this one should be a little bit easier for guys.
You did not participate, weren't able to go. How are you feeling?
Good, better. It's a tough decision to make.
Yeah.
But it was the right one. I mean, I could try and justify a million different ways. I knew what the right thing to do was. And after, like, you sit down and you talk about it, and then I want to see my kids play. That's the one thing that I was kind of pushing. And then I met with the doctors, and we just thought it was in our best interest for me to get through the rest of the year healthy in the way I wanted, to play. That it was a good opportunity, because it was either that or I miss a bunch of regular season games, which is, I don't really want to do. I think I owe it to my teammates to continue to play if I can, even if it wasn't at 100%, but I got a good 10 days to do what I had to do and get fixed what I had to fix and kind of reset things.
So you'll be in the lineup against Vancouver tomorrow?
Oh yeah. If I can find a way, like I said, even with these guys, I was a little bit, unhealthy going into the break, but I feel good enough to go.
Like, how much? I got to just tell one aside. So you were kind enough to do the old show that I did with Bob McCowan for 5 years. And I have used this line almost every time when we talk about NHL players coming into January. You were the one who spelled it out as succinctly as possible. And that was, by January of a regular season, you start to hurt.
Yeah. You hear that, right? You hear the everyone say, like, no one's healthy in the playoffs. But I think this year too, because of how condensed the schedule is, I think that's why you see, like, I don't want to say more lopsided games, but like it's a lot. The travel's been kind of unpredictable and inconsistent more than any other years. And that's not the league's fault. That's just the way it is, because we had this 2 week break. So this time of the year, yeah, you just gotta, it's a balance of like trying to be ready and find some rest, and then trying to also, get to work. And I sound like a coach, but it's even this week, right? You're trying to balance, okay, guys had 9 days off. Well, how much do we push? How much do we not push? You're going to be more sore than normal, because it's basically like going into training camp again. So every team does it differently, but I think we've done a pretty good job. We took the foot off the gas a little bit today to get back on the ice with everybody tomorrow.
Nobody has more fun than you on the ice. Yeah. Where does that come from? Because you're always talking, you're always chatting, not necessarily chirping, but having fun with guys.
I think the now, especially the further along in your career you get, you realize how much like the game, we love the game, right? Like I enjoy playing the game, but you realize you're not going to be able to do this forever. And you got to enjoy your time with your teammates. Cause the one part you talk to most former players, the one thing that they miss, obviously to compete, but is they miss being part of a locker room. That's something you can't really recreate anywhere. So, and then being a dad, right? You go home and it's like, you got to be responsible and you got to be a dad and a good husband and all these things. And then you get to the rink and it's almost like, and Darren, you see us, right? It's almost like you kind of reset and become a kid again and hang out with your buddies just to kind of get an opportunity to let loose. And I think the one thing for me playing as long as I have, being the captain in St. Louis, I learned a lot. Obviously it's like, you got to know when to kind of get the energy back up and get the enjoyment back up because it's a long season, right? I mean, you could be up and down emotionally as much as you want, but if you can find a way to get guys excited to come to the rink every day, even when things aren't going well, I think that's an important thing because the regular season can feel really, really long. It can feel really, really long. So you try and find a way to enjoy it.
And for those that don't get to watch Alex practice every day, but if he scores, he yells at you, "I scored." Yeah. And he's twirling the stick like he's
scoring games, so I got to celebrate.
Hold on. I think that's just against you, Darren.
That's
you
a lot. Yeah.
Darren's pretty good in there. I hate to admit it, but he gets in there. It's not as easy as people think.
That philosophy that you have about the camaraderie, that wasn't something that's new. Has it changed from your time since you were a rookie in St. Louis?
I just think when you're a rookie, you don't really notice it as much. I think you get so caught up in what you do as a young player. It's like hockey, 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 and you just want to perform and all that. And which obviously we still do. Everyone's playing this game to perform at their best. But I think as you get older, you learn from other guys and you see how much fun older guys have had and you say, okay, well, I got to enjoy my time with everybody because you're not going to play with everybody forever. One, and two, before you know it, it's going to be done. Like, it's hard to imagine that as a 20-year-old, I would have thought, oh my goodness, like how fast time goes. And here I am 16 years later. So I want to, hopefully leave the game knowing that guys came to work every day with me and enjoyed themselves. And I think like even our group, and it was similar when I was in St. Louis, is like, we have a group that Darren, you could probably agree. Like, our group works really hard. I mean, you watch us practice, like we love competing against each other, but no one has more fun than us. Like we love coming to work every day. And I think that's an important thing to have in a group.
When you were breaking into the league, did you think that you would play this long?
I mean, who knows? I think when you're a young player, you don't even think about it. You think you're going to play forever. It's like, doesn't even cross your mind that you're going to be eventually done one day. It's just never once crossed my mind. But obviously as you get older, you know, it's eventually it'll come to an end.
So Mark Stone's coming back. Noah Hanifin's coming back. Played on opposite sides. What kind of ribbing do you expect? What type of conversations do you expect in that? You call it a locker room. I'm still Canadian. I call it a dressing room. So what do you expect when guys from opposite sides come into the room?
Well, we have two Americans, right? If I'm correct.
Yeah, yeah. And Jack is right. Yeah.
Yeah. Jack and Hanny. That's it. So it's pretty lopsided with the Canadians.
And Mark. Yeah. But yeah, that's right.
Yeah, our trainers, the American trainers are wearing some Canadian gear today. That's pretty much the extent of the way it's, gone. So, they're pretty outnumbered, the American guys, even like our strength coach, Dougie, he's Canadian. We got a lot of Canadians in the organization.
Fun stuff. Here's Alex Pietrangelo continuing with us on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Great backdrop. Vegas in behind us. It's getting nice in and around the city right now, isn't it?
The weather's been absolutely phenomenal.
So good, John.
So nice with kids.
Be nice. Alex, you played in where you grew up. I live not far from where you grew up. I have used my snowblower more times this year than I have in the last decade.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I mean, I lived in St. Louis. It's been cold there too, but the snow, like, when you have kids too, like, my kids like the snow. They like seeing it, but we went back to St. Louis one time when there was snow, which was 3 years ago. So my kids would only been three. The boys loved it. They got like, they're like, this is the coolest thing ever. Like outside shoveling, cleaning. I still remember getting my daughter's dress and they're like, all, you know, puffed up. And they're like, they look outside and it's like, no, I'm not having this, right back inside. I'm like, spent all that time getting you dressed. And then this year when we were in St. Louis, my family flew back and the boys went and the kids went back a couple days earlier than me. And I get there and they're shoveling the back, but they're so used to going in and out of the house in Vegas because it's so dry, they're in and out of the house with their snow boots. And I'm like, no, like this is not happening. Like, take them off and get back out there. So I had a bunch of towels laid down, trying to like, but they're kids. It's kind of, they don't care. They're t-shirts. They're in t-shirts shoveling. I'm like, this is terrible.
So, everybody has a thought about Vegas. How do you view living in Vegas versus being a hockey player in St. Louis? I mean, are there distractions in St. Louis or distractions in Vegas or what happens?
Not really. I mean, we live, I mean, we're what, 25, 30 minutes from the Strip. We're nowhere near the Strip. I really only go down there with my wife for dinner or once in a while to see a show with the kids or whatever. But I mean, don't really have access. It's hard to get down there and do stuff because it's not exactly easy to access the Strip. Obviously, living in the Midwest is a completely different feel of city. It's just a completely different thing. So you can find positives and negatives to everything. I will say the weather here is hard to compete with, where even if it does get chilly, it's sunny every day. And I think last week or 2 weeks ago, they had the first measured rainfall in like 200 and something days. So that's nice.
Your kids are at an age where they're starting to play hockey. Will you coach them or do you coach them?
I will fill in when I have to. There was a good phase there where they didn't think I knew what I was talking about. So I just like, fine, you know what? Like maybe it's better that I'm hands off. Right. Maybe now they're starting to get it a little bit more. I think when I'm done, I think I would enjoy it. It's fun. It is really fun. I had a good streak going there for a little bit. I was coaching pretty well. And then I lost the game. And I think that was the last one I probably coached, but, it's hard being a coach because you can like, for us, we can see things happening so much earlier. Like I know it's 4-on-4 and it's like, it's still like minor hockey kids under 8, but I can still see the play happening. So I have to like refrain from yelling and just like, let it all happen. They're still learning how to play. And I like try and just, and the hardest thing as a coach, when you coach your own kids is to try and not be harder on your own kid. Like you got to try and treat them the same as everybody else and try and not to, you know, focus on just your kid. You got to try and talk to everybody.
Well, when you think about the whole St. Louis atmosphere, no city in America has former players working with their own children, and the growth of the game in St. Louis is because of ex-Blues players, correct?
Yeah. I think that just kind of speaks volume to the city. Anyone who has lived there with kids is a great place to raise kids, obviously, and Midwest people are great. I think you're going to see a lot of that here. Obviously, no one's retired here really other than England and maybe Flower after this year. He might come back too, but there hasn't been enough players that have retired here and stayed here with their kids to kind of get to that point. But hockey here is growing pretty big. I mean, it's they're going to have to build some more ice here eventually because there's a lot of tournaments coming here. And once the population continues to grow, I think the competition on the minor hockey will continue to get better.
Hey, when you're around the rink and the kids are playing, are you swarmed or are people pretty good about leaving you alone?
No, people are pretty good. People are pretty respectful. They kind of leave me alone, but I don't mind. It's usually the kids, right? The kids think it's pretty cool, but I'm out there quite a bit. Like if it's an early morning game, I don't care. A night game, whatever it is, I'm going to try and show up. So I think I'm out there a lot. So people can just probably get used to seeing me out there.
How are your shins?
Are you telling the story?
No, I have not told the story. I want you to tell this story. This is one of the great father-child stories.
Yeah. We were playing the other day and we had extra ice. So I brought my boys out with their friends. So there was what, 5 or 6 of them. And first shot off the shin draws blood. I'm like, okay, great. This is fun. So then I'm like, okay, I'm not going to play goalie. I'll just stand to the side of the net. So about 45 minutes passes, and it's like me and my buddy and Hurdle against our kids. So there's five of them. And it's not even the full ice. It's like a one corner of the rink. I scored, and my son Oliver is like, and my other son was playing goalie. It didn't count. It was offside. I'm like, what, offside? There's no offside. There's no lines. It's not offside. And it didn't count. I said, it counted. You guys are winning 5-2. He turns around. He two-hands me in the shin. I have this scab. Garrett's here. He's looking at me. I have this scab on my shin because he two-handed me. I was like, this is happening, right? I can start wearing shin pads. I still know when they can barely skate.
If they're looking for video review on the offside play, then this one's going to player safety.
You know? Yeah, well, I mean, I could score 20 goals. It would never count against them. You never end up winning against the kids. Yeah.
Who told mom first? You?
Me. I was mad. I mean, at that age, the kids think it's funny, right? The boys think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Hey, I've got to ask, it's a weapon.
Got to ask, you had yesterday at practice, you had Guy Goudreau out.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that like?
Really cool. And he's really good friends with Johnny Stevens. Right. So he'll stay with them for a week or so. But nice guy, really quiet guy. Trying to get him, trying to chirp him a little bit, trying to get something out of him. But he seems like he's pretty quiet. But I think for him, it's great. I think he was in Calgary with the U.S. team, Columbus with us. I think that's probably, I think Johnny said he coached his kids growing up. So he's been a hockey guy his whole life. So I think being around hockey guys for him gives him a chance to kind of, you know, enjoy being part of it and kind of maybe get his mind off things a bit. Nothing like being, like I said, nothing like being in the locker room, right?
No. Well, I tell you what, I just as an aside, I in doing some of the Calgary broadcasts years back, Guy was on one of the trips with the club, and I got talking to him, and he learned the game at a Howie Meeker hockey school in upstate New York.
There you go. And so, then he coached a lot of minor hockey after that, I heard.
And then he was a counselor at the Howie Meeker hockey school. And then when they moved to South Jersey, he's a mentor for a lot of people in that area when it comes to the game of hockey. He's a,
well connected,
he's a founder in many ways. Yeah, it's cool. It really is cool.
You mentioned a little chirping on this. The communication aspect, you do talk more than anybody I've ever seen on the ice during a game, to your partner, to the forwards, on the bench. Were you always like that as a kid? Or did you develop that skill?
I think as I've played longer, I've learned from guys how important that is. I think I played an era where when I first started, it was pretty chaotic out there. So you had to always know what was going on because guys were running around a bit more. But I'm just a big believer that if you can communicate on the ice with your line mates, especially during the game on the ice, it makes things easier. It's just a second set of eyes, right? I think on the bench too, that's just more, you know, coaches do it. I think older guys, the leadership group, like guys in that role will do it when they need a good feel for what's going on throughout the game. And it's interesting because if you have a good leadership dynamic, there's times when I'll go talk to the forwards and then, you know, let's just say Jack and Stoney will come down to the D. Maybe they see something that the D corps doesn't, and I see something that the forwards don't see. So when you have a good leadership balance, I think it definitely helps where everybody can kind of voice their opinion. It's our whole team, actually, like we have a lot of guys that communicate. It's great. I love when guys talk, and it's not always, you know, sometimes it might be something, I don't want to say constructive criticism to each other, but if you talk about it with your teammate, okay, well, now you go next shift and now you guys are on the same page instead of just going down and barking at somebody. Sometimes it's better to have that open communication.
How do you hold each other accountable?
I think that's a great way to do it. I mean, look, there's times when sometimes guys will yell at me or whatever, and that's fine. And then you sit back and like, okay, yeah, I deserve that. But for the most part, if you can establish open communication between your teammates, I think that's when you get the most out of each other when you're talking about plays on the ice. Because we all understand the game at a high level. So, but, you know, forward sees things. I'm a defenseman and I'm looking at the forecheck. Well, I see something completely different than what they see when they're on the forecheck, or vice versa. My back's to them when I'm breaking the puck out. Maybe they see something completely different. So it's good to kind of get on that same page and try and work in-game adjustments with each other.
You use the tablet on the bench?
Sometimes, mostly just to kind of see if there's something I didn't see that I want. Like sometimes you look at the game on the ice and you, oh my God, I don't have any space. And then you look out maybe on the video and you're like, okay, I have way more space out there than I thought I did. So maybe I can creep in a little bit more in the ozone, or maybe I thought I had good gaps, you know, defensively, but then you look at it on the overhead camera on the tablet and you're like, okay, well, I was about 4 or 5 feet further back than I should have been on that. So I'm not a big video guy. I don't like watching my shifts. I like when coaches like come to you and see a tendency in a 4 or 5 game span and say, hey, this is, your gaps have kind of slipped here. This is what I'm seeing. Let's try and fix this before it gets, you know, out of hand. And we don't, as good as we are in the NHL, there's, we have bad habits too. So sometimes you need that to be corrected.
What's the most important thing you look at when you go out for a game? What's your number one priority? Is it gaps?
I think probably being good defensively for me is like an important thing. And I think for our group, like our team specifically, is establishing our game first. I think we're really good. Like we obviously have gotten down a lot this year, more than we wanted to, but I think we've had better starts late. And I think we have early control of the game that kind of bleeds into the second period. I think we're a really good team. So trying to get a hold of the game early is really important.
Okay. So the race to trade deadline starts tomorrow, and then it's another month after that to the end of the regular season. Are you a guy that on the plane or in the locker room, dressing room, watches the standings? Do you look at the standings, or you just play your game and win your points and see what happens at the end?
I'm being serious. I look more at the standings now because my kids want to know where we are than I ever did before. Like I know we have it in the locker room, so you have a general idea, but they always ask me like, who's in first, who's winning, what place are you guys in? Like, are you guys winning? So I tend to look more now than ever before, but I'm not like actively watching. I think as you get closer to the playoffs, when whether we're fighting for a spot or teams that are, you know, fighting for that last playoff spot, I think that it gets interesting to watch, because then you figure out, you know, how important some of these games are down the stretch.
No, well, if it started today, you'd be playing the Kings. You'd be playing the Kings if it started today. So
we got 26 more. A lot can change till then.
Yeah, I know.
What stresses you out, man?
I would say the fact that I got to think about this.
That's my question. That answers my question. It's so
the thing that's obviously stresses me out the most is like not being around my kids. Like that, like, it's fun going on the road because you get to go for dinners and all this stuff. But after 4 or 5 days on like a long, long road trip, it's like, it's not so much stress as anxiety where you're not around your kids. You're not helping. Like my wife is a saint. Like she is a saint. She does everything. I mean, I'd be lying if I said she wasn't our rock. And then when I'm not there to help, it's tough. You want to be around to help. You want to be dad. It stresses me out when I miss the, you know, whether it's gymnastics for the girls or the boys baseball or hockey or soccer for the girls, whatever it is. I don't like missing that stuff. I like going to their activities as much as I can. I like being present at that stuff because there's nothing better. Like even last night we had dance and you like watch the girls dance through this tiny little window and they see you and they wave at you and they smile. Like that is a cool thing. And I haven't been able to go this year because we've always had a game. So I finally had an opportunity to go on a Thursday and that felt really good for me.
Where was that instilled? Was that your mom and dad?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, they were present. They were at every possible thing they could be at. But when you have your own kids, it's a special, special thing. It really is.
This team, how good are you guys?
Well, I think our record speaks for itself. I think we had a pretty tough January, but if you look at where we were before that and the way we ended the last couple games on that road trip, I think we're a good team. Like we're up and down the lineup. I think people underestimate our depth. I think we haven't had Carl here for a long period, which is obviously a big piece. Creates a lot of pace for us, plays in all situations. I think like most teams this year, injuries have been a problem with the condensed schedule. You're trying to balance playing through things and you know, trying to get as much rest in between games, but I don't see why we're not as good We can be. I like our defense. We're deep. Our goalies have been good. I think the cool thing about our decor is we can play six guys and just kind of roll. Play two. Like we can just roll four lines and 6D, two goalies, really, if we wanted to. I think that's important.
By the way, Bruce Cassidy, Aiden Hill, and Shea Theodore just reminded you that they were in the tournament too. So,
wow,
we don't. It's funny. It was out of sight, out of mind for a lot of a situation like that. I was actually surprised that Shea stayed for the rest of the tournament.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to ask him why, but I think his parents might have been there too, which is a fun thing. You know, he's got a little one that maybe was. They were there. It's just easier. I mean, and the cool thing is he got to go on the ice last night too, right? I mean, that's maybe something you want to do with those guys. So credit to him.
Well, you'd be leaning on some of that depth with Shea Theodore being out of the lineup. We appreciate you sharing some of the thoughts, both hockey and family, with us.
Yeah, that was easy.
Really? I got one more then.
You got as many questions as you want.
The invite for this, the decision not to go in this tournament doesn't affect your desire to go to Italy next year? With a name like Petrangelo?
Yeah, exactly. Right. I'll fit in there. It's almost in my head. I'm almost thinking like it actually helps me maybe go, because if I just continue to, you know, play through what I'm playing through and then I have to deal with it again next year, then I'm dealing with this again next year. Well, what if I can take care of this now, and then next year, you know, I'm healthy all year, and then I get a chance to play. Like, the Olympics is a really cool, really, really special thing. It is a very special thing. And the coolest thing for me, it's funny when you go through these things, like I was 24, but now I appreciate it, I think, a little bit more. And I didn't really realize it at the time, but the last night after we won in our Olympic Village, all the Canadian athletes had they had a bunch of food and beer and whatever, and just talking to other athletes and how their experience is obviously completely different than what we're dealing with going over there. That was a really cool thing to experience. So I wish I would have appreciated that a little bit more when I was talking to those, you know, other athletes. So you're part of a bigger thing, right? You're part of a bigger group.
Sure. All right. Two things out of Sochi. Who did you ride bikes with when you went back and forth from the village to the rink? You probably had to ride the bike with the same guys.
We were right there. Like we were.
So you didn't have to ride a bike?
I don't think every day. No, we were pretty close. We were like the building, from what I remember. It's a long time ago. You're making me feel old now. It was. I think it was
look
the
who
building.
You're talking And did you adopt a dog too?
I'll be honest. My wife tried to. It was like a schnauzer mixed with who knows. But it was like a big dog. I think it stayed in the room with my wife one night. Yeah, it did, in the hotel room. And she tried to bring it back. We couldn't get it back. We just couldn't find a way. Yeah.
But that ended up being one of the great conversation points of all the guys bringing dogs home.
Yeah. I would have brought it back if I could. Go back for the thing. And now we're getting a new puppy. So there you go. She got her fix.
Oh, are you?
No, I love my wife, but I have three dogs now. Three dogs.
What, you're getting a new puppy too?
Yeah, his name's Elvis.
Elvis, what kind?
We have he's a Cavapoo. We have a Shih Tzu who's 12, a Retriever that's 10, and now we have this guy. I thought it was a joke. I thought you were joking.
Well, what's a Cavapoo? That's what I want to know.
It's a Cocker Spaniel mixed with a poodle. I think that sounds right in my head. I have no idea. It's a little guy. The kids will love it.
You have four kids and three dogs?
We got two fish too. And then she's got to deal with me. Imagine.
You know what? You're right. She is a saint.
She is a saint. She is as good as they come.
Yeah. I'm even more appreciative of your time. Will they say your name right in Italy next year if you're at the Olympics?
Oh, they're going to say it as good as they can say it.
Yeah. What's the worst pronunciation you've heard?
Some people don't even bother. They just start and they just give up. They just mumble a few words and then it's like, I'm good enough. Good enough.
Petro, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, guys. Happy to do it.
Back on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. He's a personality. I wanted to talk to him on the podcast to give everybody a an idea of what he's really like behind the scenes, because he is just, there's not a conversation he can't participate in, whether it's being a dad or running around or real life or, and then you've got the National Hockey League part.
Well, I tell you what, the his explanation of his work-life balance, his work-family balance, to me was fascinating. You know, I didn't ask the question, maybe I should have. If he had a choice between playing a game or going to a recital, I think there might be a day he'd say, I'd rather go to the recital.
Yeah, he enjoys being a dad more than any person I've ever met.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic. It really is. And the explanation of the dual life, being a dad at home and then going back into the fraternity of the dressing room, right? I mean, because that it is men playing boys' games when you go back into the dressing room, and it's all bets are off. Ribbing starts, winning starts. It would be a good thing to have somebody write a thesis on what it's like to be a professional athlete from an attitude perspective. And you really have to be selfish at one point. I'm not saying that in a negative sense, but you have to be selfish to be able to block everything else out in order to perform at an elite level as an athlete.
You love this at times, mostly in the summer, but there's the odd time during the winter where I'll get to be out with them. And if we're having some kind of scrimmage or little small area game and I make a save, he yells at me sportively if he's on my team, like, but the name he uses is Tabarachi. And it's so funny. Every now and then, I'll just hear this, Tabarachi.
Now, where's the Rick Tabarachi come from?
I don't know.
Is he the only goalie that he knew?
I have no idea why he says
it. Never asked him?
I never asked him. I just giggle all the time. Tabarachi. And Braden McNabb says, Habby Boolin. And I just go along with it. So I thought you'd appreciate those two names.
Hey, on a totally different angle, not Four Nations, not spending time with Alex Petrangelo, but the hockey world lost somebody special this week, and that was Mike Lang, who was the play-by-play man in Pittsburgh for the Penguins on radio and television for a long period of time, actually worked for the organization for 46 years. Not all of them as a broadcaster. He started in PR. But when you think about the strength of the game of hockey, a lot of it, Darren, and I think you'd appreciate this, a lot of it is at the local level. You know, there wasn't always millions and billions of dollars being spent by networks to carry games. And so there was a lot of emphasis on what the local broadcasters did. And Mike Lang carried the Pittsburgh Penguins through thick and thin. Mike Lang was there for bankruptcies. He was there for Stanley Cup championships. He created a tremendous bond with all of the Penguin fans in Western Pennsylvania. He did a magnificent job of being that conduit. And he retired a few years back, but was always around. You go to a game in Pittsburgh, one of the voices you hear recorded is it's a hockey night in Pittsburgh, and that's Mike Lang's. And then all his great sayings that over the years people across the country or around the United States and Canada can remember all the things that he talked about, with Elvis leaving the building and, you know,
beat him like a rented mule.
Hurry up, Mama, the bingo game starting, all these things that were so colloquial worked for Mike and worked for the fans in that area of the United States. So it's a sad day that Mike Lang passed away. He died at 76, but his imprint on the game will last forever in Pittsburgh because he did such a marvelous job for so many people.
In a time where everybody's looking for that one way to stand out, whether you've got a shtick or some kind of hook. Mike Lang did it easier than a lot of people in a very traditional sport. What made him able to walk that balancing act?
I think a lot of it had to do with where he was. And when I say that, it was Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh was famous for eccentric announcers. Bob Prince with the Pirates, Myron Cope with the Steelers. There was something about that relationship, and Mike was able to build that relationship with the hockey fans. And the other word that gets tremendously overused in every aspect of life these days is he could do it because he made it organic. It wasn't forced. It just happened, and he knew when to use those sayings. And the reason he did that was he knew the game so well. You know, if you stripped off all of those little sayings, Mike's play-by-play was very good. Mike's play-by-play puts you right there in the first row. He did a magnificent job. And I certainly hope that over the next day or two, and I know that the Regional Sports Network in Pittsburgh has done a tribute for him most of this Friday. I certainly hope and I expect tomorrow the Penguins will do something special for him when they play the Caps. There was a point in time in Pittsburgh that if you weren't talking about the Penguins, or if you were talking rather about the Penguins, you were talking about Mario Lemieux or Sidney Crosby or Mike Lang. And that's how important Mike Lang was to the Pittsburgh Penguins and to Pittsburgh Penguin fans.
He overshadowed himself, because I guarantee you, majority of people will talk about the phrases, the catchphrases.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And but, not but, about but that's the, why I the say ability you take, to do the job.
And he loved the game. Boy, he loved the game of hockey. He really did. I know it's shaken a few people that Mike. And so, but it was just, you know, something that it's important that Mike Lang, who won the Foster Hewitt Award, you know, he's an associate member of the Hall of Fame. He's got a plaque down at Young and Front in Toronto in the hall. But Mike Lang is, he was one of a kind. We will never see anybody like Mike Lang again. I think probably because people won't let that happen anymore, which is in one sense too bad. But in many ways, the greatest thing was there was only Mike Lang and a lot of people got to hear him.
Producers like you won't let it happen?
Oh, I think you're probably right. Yeah. I think you're probably right at some point. But we were. I still remember I produced the Stanley Cup Final in 1992, Chicago versus 1993, Chicago versus Pittsburgh. And the celebration was in the Pittsburgh dressing room at the Chicago Stadium. A part of our post game was our host in the dressing room doing interviews was told by the producer in his ear, "Hey, that's Mike Lang behind you. Talk to him and ask him what he said on the air in Pittsburgh." And then he gave us one of his great "Elvis has left the building" as a sign that the Pittsburgh Penguins had won the Stanley Cup. So I love Mike Lang. He was great.
What was your favorite phrase?
Oh, I think you have to go with Elvis has left the building. That was Yager.
I like the motorcycle. I like motorcycle.
Yeah. But it speaks to what regional guys, what local guys have been for the sport. You know, Joe Bowen in Toronto. Rick Jeanneret, who just passed away, what he meant in Buffalo. You know, Bob Miller in Los Angeles. I have a soft spot for St. Louis.
Sam Dan Rosen. Kelly. In his last
Sam year. Rosen, who's retiring this year with the Rangers. Those people have really kept the flame of fandom alive for a lot of people as the NHL has tried to find a place on network television. television, particularly in the United States.
Yeah, and there's such a difference between regional broadcast and network television.
Totally.
In where you're able to go.
Yep.
Some of it I agree with. But you have to be different and entertaining on a regional level night after night instead of being able to satisfy the masses.
When you're doing 75 games of the same team, that's a challenge.
Yeah. Got to be better. You got to be different. You got to stand out in some way. That was fun today. Jordan Binnington, really I'm happiest for him. And I'm really pleased that Connor Hellebuyck was great too. I think there's outstanding possibilities for him to be able to shelve a narrative. But Jordan Binnington, like that conversation that was happening for months and months and months, most talked about area of the Four Nations faceoff was Team Canada's goaltending, ended up being a positive.
Well, it'll be fascinating to see what happens down the stretch. I mean, can Binnington get his team back into the playoff hunt?
Yeah.
Will he be able to do that? I mean, I don't know. And how about the fact, too? So Binnington now has won two championships, both in the same building.
Yes.
Both as the visitor. Because he went 2019 when he was the goaltender of the Blues in Game 7. And Thursday night as the goaltender for Canada against the United States.
Fun stuff. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week when we return for 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lowe's knows you want the best for dad. This Father's Day, help him take on any project with big deals on DeWalt. Right now, get a free XR 8 amp hour battery when you buy select DeWalt tools. That's not all. Get up to two free select tools when you buy a select DeWalt 20 volt max battery kit. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a work load is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
When it comes to Father's Day, some things never change. Dads want steak. And the experts at Omaha Steaks are making it easy for you to deliver uncompromising quality with gifts that are sure to make his day. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code THANKSDAD when you shop omahasteaks.com today. We know being your dad means he already has everything he could want. But just picture the look on his face when he sees those extra-aged USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy air-chilled chicken, beefy burgers, and more. With carefully curated gift packages from America's original butcher, it's never been easier to show everyone why you're dad's favorite. And every bite is 100% guaranteed to bring a thrill to the king of the grill. Shop now at omahasteaks.com and get an extra $35 off with code THANKSDAD. But don't wait. Father's Day is June 15th. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.